Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Ayan Bior in Washington. Here are some of the stories we're covering today, Wednesday, August 31st, 2016. A petition is circulated online to provide additional protections to aid workers in South Sudan after the terrain complex attack. And a cholera outbreak in Niamey is confirmed. We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Diplomats from the UN Security Council are expected to be in South Sudan by the end of the week. South Sudan Foreign Affairs spokesman Mawin McCull told Reuters there is not a definite day when the diplomats are due to arrive in Juba, but he expects to have more information later this week. Last week, UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon appointed retired Dutch General Patrick Cammaert to lead an independent investigation into reports of attacks and sexual assaults on civilians and international aid workers in the capital last month that occurred within or around the UN House Protection of Civilians site and the terrain compound. The UN says it will make the findings of their investigation public within 1 month. Cammaert led the UN Headquarters Board of Inquiry on the circumstances leading up to the violence that erupted in Malakal in mid-February. That report found that UNMISS failed to manage the crisis and hesitated to use lethal force to protect civilians inside the camp. 30 people died and at least 120 others were injured in those attacks. Aid workers trapped in the train complex said government forces broke down the door, looted the building, and sexually assaulted international aid workers, including Americans. After the workers had made repeated calls to their contacts in Juba, including UN peacekeepers, pleading for help. 4 hours later, government security forces arrived and stopped the attacks. Following the Juba terrain complex incident, a Change.org online petition is circulating on the internet that urges the United Nations to grant protected legal status for humanitarian aid workers under international humanitarian law. It also calls for the appointment of a special rapporteur on aid worker protection and well-being. Imogen Wall, one of the authors of the online petition, says last month's fighting in South Sudan, during which time American and other international aid workers reported being raped by government soldiers, provoked her and others to take action.
But really, it comes from a deeper and longer running sense, strong sense within the sector that as aid workers, we have no protection when we're working in the field, that we are exposed to dangers that we should not be exposed to, and everybody knows it's a risky job, but that we are exposed to dangers that are not understood, that we are not supported, and we are not cared for in the way that we need. So that's really where this petition comes from. It's in response to that particular incident that's tapping into a much deeper sense of frustration and anger that we are not been given the basic support we need to do our jobs.
The petition has received over 3,000 backers since it was introduced on World Humanitarian Day earlier this month, with the goal of securing 5,000 signatures. Wall says they want to bring more attention to the issues that aid workers face on a daily basis.
You know, the vast majority of humanitarian crises now are in conflict environments. You know, my colleagues and I were exposed to gunfire. We're listening to appalling stories of suffering. We're trying to operate in active theatres of war in many cases, or dealing with those who are themselves suffering very acutely from exposure to conflict.
Worldwide, the UN's Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs reports that there were 148 attacks against aid workers last year, which took place in 25 countries. OCHA also says that South Sudan was the most dangerous country for aid workers in 2015. The agency reported at least 31 aid workers were attacked in South Sudan, compared to 10 in Syria and 27 in Afghanistan.
We see very high turnover in our work. There's not a single study, for example, into aid worker suicide, not one. And you think how much awareness there is now of what PTSD does to veterans. You know, there's a massive disparity here, and that's what we need to talk about.
The petitioners are also demanding that more resources be given to aid workers, as well as an implementation of safety conditions for aid workers to operate under. The UN's Department of Peacekeeping Operations and Field Support in New York did not respond to a request for comment on the petition. The United States released a statement today saying it is profoundly alarmed by a recent UNICEF report that implicates South Sudanese government forces in the recent recruitment of child soldiers since fighting broke out in Juba early last month. State Department spokesman John Kirby says aside from calling for an immediate end to the ongoing violence, the U.S. insists on an immediate halt to the illegal practice of recruiting and using child soldiers by government and opposition forces. The U.S. warns that individuals responsible for the unlawful recruitment of child soldiers for armed groups or forces may be subject to sanctions under U.S. law and may be targeted for U.N. sanctions. The children's agency UNICEF announced about 2 weeks ago that 650 children had been recruited into South Sudan's current conflict this year alone. UNICEF also notes that some 16,000 children have been recruited by both government and opposition forces since the South Sudan conflict erupted in late 2013. Kirby says the U.S. is committed to ensuring that those who are recruiting child soldiers are held accountable. Imatong state health officials say a cholera outbreak has surfaced in the border town of Nyamulay as hundreds of South Sudanese refugees return from Uganda. Of the 10 suspected cases that turned up at Nyamulay Hospital over the past 2 weeks, 4 are confirmed cholera. Health officials have set up a treatment center in Nyamulay, as we hear from Dimo Silva in Torit.
While local health officials are concerned about the cholera outbreak so far since Nyamulay Hospital started receiving cholera cases 2 weeks ago and that most of them have been discharged, Pagere County Health Director Amoko Simon says 11 suspected cholera patients have been admitted at the facility since August 15th.
The samples were taken to Juba for confirmation. There were 5 samples being sent to Juba. Out of the 5, 4 are found to be positive. These cases are coming. Some are coming from Uganda side. Some are reported from Maratia, Nyamulay.
Simon says most of the patients admitted at the Nyamulay Hospital are children below the age of 5.
Right now, as I talk, out of 11, 10 are discharged ill, and we are left with only one case, a child who is malnourished. And is now the only remaining case.
Imorong State Acting Health Minister Margaret Ito says health officials at Nyamulay started receiving additional patients with acute diarrhea and vomiting, which she says are typical symptoms of cholera. She says health workers took blood samples for testing. Ito blames the outbreak on poor living conditions among South Sudanese refugees at nearby Elegu camp.
The cases are coming from the camp. So almost all these cases are coming across. They are our people, but our people who have run across. And you know, being a refugee somewhere and there is overcrowding, probably even the water they are taking is not clean.
Simon says international health officials in Nyamulay are educating the public on how to control the spread of cholera.
Social mobilization is ongoing, and tell the children internationally who is managing the cases which are represented in the facility.
National Health Ministry officials in Juba have confirmed the cholera outbreak in Nyamulay. It comes at a time when Juba health officials have just reported a reduction in cholera cases in Juba. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Torit.
The Jonglei and Boma state governors held a one-day peace conference to try to restore peace between the Dinka and Murley communities. Border disputes, trade disagreements, cattle raids, and a general lack of trust have divided the two communities for years. The Jonglei governor says the communities can live peacefully together, as they did in the 1950s, when pastoralists from both communities grazed cattle together on the banks of the Nile River. Jacob Achek reports for VOA from Juba.
At the Dinga Murley Peace Conference held yesterday in Buma State's Gumru County, Jonglei Governor Philip Aguirre says the two states will form a joint committee to manage relations between the Dinga and Murley communities.
From here onward, we should plan our grassroots peace building between the Murley and the Dinka Boer communities, and we should involve joint planning for peace committees and setting meeting between the chiefs and the members of the local government to identify areas of cooperation.
Aguirre says achieving lasting peace in Jonglei and Buma estates will pave the way for leaders in intercommunal conflict, Riden, Akobo and Fangag estates to restore peace between their ethnic communities. Buma State Governor Baba Medan Konyi says he will work with the Jonglei state counterpart to ensure that Dingas and Murle people achieve sustainable peace and that traders can move freely from one community to another.
We need our people to move free from here to Bor, from Bor to Buma State without any obstacles. If you want to take the cattle from here to Bor or bring the goods from Bor to here, you are free.
We are starting us from now so that if the business people have their cattle to move to Bor, the road is open. For us as the government of Buma State, we are serious on the issue of the child abduction and then cattle raids.
The UNMISS chief in Jonglei State's capital Bor, Deborah Chin, applauds the effort of both states leaders to bring about peace and stability in the region.
You need to put a stop to the criminal elements in your society who are destroying the good reputation of the Murle people and causing pain for the mothers in her, whose children have been abducted. And we in the international community need to speak loud and clear about these issues. And I agree with what the advisor said, that the international community cannot bring peace. It's the people that must bring peace. But we can support peace.
Representative of the United Nations Mission in South Sudan, faith-based group, and traditional leaders also attended Tuesday's conference. The two communities have been fighting on and off since the 1980s. For VOA News, I'm Jacob Achek from Juba.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. National and international rights groups are decrying a criminal trial the Sudan government is holding against 10 rights activists. More on that story when we come back.
For in-depth news and analysis on events in South Sudan, tune in to South Sudan in Focus, Monday through Friday from 1630 to 1700 UTC. We are also on the web at www.voanews.com/South Sudan or download our podcast on iTunes. That's South Sudan in Focus on VOA Africa.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
how important is it to you to get a good night's sleep?
According to me, it's part of healing. Another thing it is, one can be relieved from his stress. Yeah.
It is important in a sense that I feel refreshed in the morning when I wake up. My minds are fresh, my whole body I feel fresh. Yeah, I can do anything the whole day after having a good night's sleep.
It is very important to me because I always refresh after sleep, so everything goes on well after that.
Okay, for my case, it is important because I have to sleep. Okay, I have to have a good night's sleep because I need to wake up early to come for lectures, or in case I'm working, I need to wake up early to go to the office for work.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus. The trial of 10 Sudanese civil society activists got underway in Khartoum yesterday, despite calls by local, regional, and international rights groups for Sudan to drop all charges against the rights activists. The men on trial, who are affiliated with a training and development organization based in Khartoum, are accused of committing crimes against the state. Nabil Biagio has more for VOA from Khartoum.
The African Center for Justice and Peace Studies, Amnesty International, Defend Defenders, the International Federation for Human Rights, and other rights groups have condemned the trial. Defense lawyer Muhammad Mustafa says the charges against the 10 men are serious. Some carry the death penalty if convicted. But speaking in Arabic, Mustafa says the government's case against the activists is flimsy. He says these charges are all related to crimes against the state, such as Article 50, Article 51, Article 53, and Article 65. I expect the court to dismiss this case due to a lack of any credible evidence. Article 50 of Sudan's Penal Code stipulates the penalty for undermining the constitutional order. Article 51 talks about instigating war against the state. Article 53 spells out what constitutes espionage. And Article 65 details the punishment for terrorist organizations. Mustafa says the charges stem from the fact that Sudan does not tolerate human rights activism. Khartoum-based human rights lawyer Saleh Mahmoud agrees, saying they are all trumped-up charges.
My point of view as a lawyer is more political than there are specific crimes that have been committed related to the Penal Code of Sudan.
Sudanese government spokesman Ahmed Bilal dismissed calls to drop the charges. He says the charges against the 10 are criminal in nature and have nothing to do with politics.
Can you call this is a political act? It's a criminal act, and he's in front of the court. We cannot interfere, actually. Maybe after the trial took place, and then they can call for forgiveness or something. But to stop it, this is incorrect.
Mahmoud says the 5 human rights organizations calling for the immediate release of the 10 activists spoke up at the right time.
I think their demand for the release is legitimate demand, taking into consideration the experience of the civil society here in Sudan relating to the hardships mainly coming from the government pressure and targeting the civil society movement, preventing the civil society to properly address the basic rights and freedoms of the people of Sudan.
8 of the 10 activists were arrested at their center while training Sudanese citizens on human rights. All of their computers and documents were confiscated by security operatives. A week later, 5 were released but continued to be summoned and questioned about their activities by authorities. 3 activists remain in detention. They were arrested in May. All 10 are being tried in the same Khartoum courtroom, although some face different criminal charges. Court proceedings are expected to resume early next week. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio in Khartoum.
Authorities in the disputed Abyei region say things have been relatively quiet over the past 3 months following fighting there. Residents say they've had nothing to eat, forcing many of them to flee northward to Sudan. But officials say now that a new market has opened on the Sudan-South Sudan border, residents can buy food locally. Michael Atit has the details for VOA from Juba.
Abyei administration spokesman Alor Dawalbeit says the border market called Nom has contributed greatly to the stability of the area. Dawalbeit says basic food commodities such as sugar, sorghum, and oil, among others, are now available in Abyei.
This market helped a lot and assist the 2 communities and even 2 countries, South Sudan and Sudan. Sugar and dura and these things are very available in the market, and they went as far as Juba and Equatoria, Bahr Ghazal. So the traders come from that area and they enter the market, they buy and sell.
In February this year, the Dinka Ngok of South Sudan and the Miseria Nomadic Group of Sudan agreed at a peace conference held in Nom to allow Miseria to graze their cattle in the area during the dry season only. Dawalbeit says due to the stability in the area, nearly 750 internally displaced families have returned to Abyei from Wau, Raja, and other areas of the greater Bahr Ghazal region. Internally displaced persons fled the area in 2012 when armed Miseria attacked residents in the area shortly after South Sudan's independence. Dawalbeit says residents who fled the violence and food insecurity during that time and moved to northward Sudan have been returning home.
We received people who fled from Wau town. Now some people pass through Abyei to northern Sudan. Some people are going for medical check. Some people, maybe the situation is not it's not okay with them. Yeah, so they cross the borders. They go.
Dolbet says majority of the Abyei returnees have settled in Nome, Dakura, Mayankor, Pachalei, and Mariala Chak. The Walbet says there are no major health issues in the area so far, and he says local leaders are working with humanitarian agencies in the area to provide basic health services.
Malaria is the thing that only facing people, but there is no outbreak of any disease.
The Walbet cautions that outbreaks of malaria are common in the Abyei region. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Juba.
In Kenya, the call for the government to act on extrajudicial killings and disappearances is growing by the day. For VOA, Mohamed Yusuf reports.
This week, the body of a nurse who disappeared 10 days ago was discovered in a morgue in central Kenya. According to local media, investigators say the body had injuries on the hands and neck, showing signs of torture. Extrajudicial killings and disappearances like this continue in Kenya, despite the push by human rights organizations and Western governments for Kenya's government to investigate and end such incidents. Kenyan security agencies have denied accusations they are responsible for the killing, but blame rogue police officers. The head of the Independent Medical Legal Unit in Kenya, Peter Kiama, says the killings of civilians by police have increased.
We have a situation that seems to be getting out of hand. This has become a serious national crisis. We continue to see people within the criminal justice system disappearing in the hands of the police, and also, you know, increased cases of misuse of firearms by the police that lead to extrajudicial executions, but also increasing cases of extrajudicial executions through strangulation by police officers.
In July, Kenyans were outraged and took to the streets when a human rights lawyer, his client, and a taxi driver were tortured and killed, allegedly by police officers. Four administration police officers are facing murder charges. Last week, gunmen thought to be police officers walked into a hospital in Mwingi in eastern Kenya and killed a patient who was being treated of a gunshot wound. Kenyan media report the sister of the victim who witnessed the shooting went into hiding after receiving threats. Kiama says that is not unusual.
Witnesses to these cases are becoming under threat, and families who would like to seek justice are increasingly getting threats even within their households, being visited by suspects and supporters of the suspects to silence them.
A recent Human Rights Watch report documented 34 disappearances in the past 2 years in the hands of different security agencies. The group's Kenyan researcher Otisiana Namwaya says the government needs to form a commission to investigate these cases.
We know that this problem of killings and disappearances is a much bigger problem, and that's why we think that we need to have a thorough investigation that looks at this problem holistically. So if a commission of inquiry is established, people will actually begin to see something that looks like an investigation, and people will finally get to know at least the extent of the problem.
Security authorities say all the cases of missing individuals and killings will be investigated and action will be taken. 9 police officers are facing murder charges in connection with the killings of civilians in the past 2 months. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
Here's a recap of today's top stories with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Dam.
Thanks, Ayan. UN Security Council diplomats are heading to South Sudan this week to investigate the terrain complex attacks that occurred in Juba last month. South Sudan Foreign Affairs spokesman Mawen McColl told Reuters today that the government does not know exactly when the diplomats will arrive, but they should be in Juba by week's end. Last week, UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon appointed retired Dutch General Patrick Cammaert to lead an independent investigation into the reports of sexual attacks on aid workers and the murder of a local journalist, which occurred in and around the UN House Protection of Civilians site, as well as the Terrain Hotel compound. The UN says it will make the findings of their investigation public within 1 month. Cammaert led the UN Headquarters Board of Inquiry on the circumstances leading up to the violence that erupted in Malakal in mid-February. That report found that UNMISS failed to manage the crisis and hesitated to use lethal force to protect civilians inside the camp. Some 30 people died and at least 120 others were injured in those attacks. Many aid workers reported calling their UN contacts in Juba who failed to intervene when the workers were being threatened by government forces. Following the Juba Terrain Complex incident, when they were reportedly raped by government soldiers, a Change.org online petition is circulating on the internet that urges the United Nations to grant protected legal status for humanitarian aid workers under international humanitarian law. It also calls for the appointment of a special rapporteur on aid worker protection and well-being. Imogene Wall, one of the authors of the online petition, says last month's fighting in South Sudan, during which time American and other workers reported those rapes by government soldiers, she and others decided to take action. The petition has received over 3,000 backers since it was introduced on World Humanitarian Day earlier this month, with a goal of securing some 5,000 signatures. Wall says they want to bring more attention to the issues that aid workers face on a daily basis. The petitioners are also demanding that more resources be given to aid workers in South Sudan, as well as an implementation of safety conditions for aid agencies to operate under, which follows an international code of conduct. The UN's Department of Peacekeeping Operations and Field Support in New York did not respond to requests for comment on the petition. And finally, the United States released a statement today saying it is profoundly alarmed by the recent UNICEF report that indicates South Sudanese government forces recruit child soldiers and have done so since fighting broke out in Juba early last month. State Department spokesman John Kirby says, aside from calling for an immediate end to the ongoing violence, the UN is insisting on an immediate halt to the illegal practice of recruiting and using child soldiers by government and opposition forces. The U.S. warns that individuals responsible for the unlawful recruitment or use of child soldiers for armed groups or forces may be subject to sanction under U.S. law and may be targeted for United Nations sanctions. The children's agency UNICEF announced about 2 weeks ago that some 650 children had been recruited into South Sudan's current conflict this year alone. UNICEF also notes that some 16,000 children have been recruited by both government and opposition forces since the South Sudan conflict erupted in late 2013. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Dam.
Thanks, Carol. And that's our show for this Wednesday. We leave you with the Bari song by Freedom Boys.
Mojuka de nana mode, Koneda nanbura.
We've been listening to The Freedom Boys with the Bari song. I'm Ayan Bior in Washington. We're glad you could be here with us. We'll see you tomorrow right here on this station for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.